Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I've got a cold, but it still sounds exciting. Another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob.
I really enjoyed the look on your face during that music. You're like, we're here. We're doing it.
I can't believe I made it here.
We are doing it. Couple of just mentions, as always, business to get out of the way. Please, everybody, check out Dr.com. We have a new, out of that opium series, we're going to create a series of podcasts where we do interviews and commentary after each chapter of the opiate book. Also, Midday Live, KBC.
It's called Trickling. You're trickling.
Yeah, trickling it out.
Yeah, it's good.
Because it's good stuff. And a lot of people are starting to look at the history of addiction now throughout human history, and it's timely to have that. Our Hydrolite friends, click through on the doctor.com on the Hydrolite banner and use that code DRDRW18. You get 30% off. Genotox, these are the guys that have Tox Protect that allow you to do a cheek swab to determine the accuracy of your urine toxicology, and so you can't tamper with it, which is a really good way to go.
Blood's a good way to go too.
I suppose it seems expensive.
I don't trust drug addicts with the urine,
but you know. But you got to know something, that things concentrate in the urine the way they don't in the blood. So you actually,
really?
Yeah, you can actually get, that's why we rely on the urine toxicology, because it's a better screen.
Wait. I might have screwed up.
Well, blood is more accurate.
Oh, okay.
But in terms of screening, the urine is better. I had this theory,
if you blood test somebody twice a week, there's no way they can lie. There's like a 12-hour window.
They can lie.
Where they can lie.
If they know what they're doing, they can figure it out. And then our friends at True Niagen, I take
Do
that
drug
product.
Addicts lie, by the way?
To hear people talk about the disease of addiction today, that whole piece has been left out of the conversation. But let me just mention our friends at True Niagen, dr.com/True Niagen. I take that product every day. Let me introduce our guest. I will get to that.
Newport Beach.
All right, go ahead.
It's in Orange County, right?
Yep, I went and talked to them, and I'm pleased.
Yeah,
I like them.
But we'll talk about that later.
But you've seen them all, so you know about them.
Yes, you can vouch.
We love our sponsors.
They are.
We're so appreciative. It keeps the show going.
Yeah.
Even if we don't want to do it anymore, we still have to keep going.
Because of our sponsors. No, we try to select people very carefully that we think are worthy of
your
attention.
It's only the second rehab I think we've had.
It's only the second one. That's exactly right.
And mine.
And yours, so third, to be fair. But we try to be very, very careful with this stuff, and so we really appreciate you bearing with us. That's how we're able to keep doing these things. And again, we the things I say are actually things I mean about these products.
Also, speaking of recovery, a lot of people were very curious how Bob feels about his rehab burning down during the fire.
Oh, we can talk about it. It was quite a to-do. That might be a half an episode.
Yeah, let's get the guy.
That's, I guarantee you that's something that's not going to happen to Milwaukee rehab.
Well, why don't you introduce our guests?
These are my buddies. These are the guys. I love these guys. I've been talking about them for a year.
Yep.
It's the Don't Die Wisconsin guys. I went up there to Milwaukee, and they're just amazing.
Let me introduce them in the way they claim
the way they want to be introduced.
Well, okay, let me try. Kevin Schaefer, intervention specialist.
Yes.
Patrick Riley, counselor. Ryan Gorman, resident junkie. That's how they're presented.
Here's how I would do it.
That's how you were presented to me. I apologize if it was wrong.
No, that's it. That's it. Kevin's also a drug counselor.
Though. Yeah.
Hey, let me say this. The word junkie, which I love tossing
and
around.
And he's a commie, too.
He's awesome.
He's the Bob incarnate of Milwaukee.
but language is under attack today. Let me just start with this. Language is under attack.
Yeah, you can't say junkie.
Can't say addiction. And to me, I know of no more way to enhance stigma than to start to regulate language.
But let's talk about words. So Ryan and I consider ourselves commies.
Okay.
That's what we were called our whole lives by our dads. Mm-hmm. You know, you went to college and you became a liberal. Mm-hmm. Now, progressive is the word you use instead of commie.
Right.
Like,
well, you can say socialist now. It allows you to say socialist.
Straight from commie to liberal. That's progressive. Oh. Yeah. A lot of stops in there.
So it's just soulmates in Milwaukee is what it is.
So Don't Die Wisconsin, dedicated to talking about addiction, much like our Dobie Boy friends in the East Coast.
Yeah,
right?
They know Dave.
Yeah.
There's not two guys in Dopey anymore, too.
Well,
there's only one.
But they are still our Dopey guy friends.
Yeah.
One is
you said plural. You said guys. It's just Dave.
Okay. My bet is Dave will come up with somebody that will participate.
Well, Artie Lang should do it, but I don't know if he's sober.
Not yet. I'm working on it.
Not yet.
I'm working on it.
So let's talk about Wisconsin and the opiate crisis. What's going on?
We're going down.
Yeah. It's bad, right?
Coming down the numbers.
No, the death rate's going down.
Oh, those are,
they made an impact.
China just put tightened the spigot on fentanyl today.
But isn't it carfentanil too? But they anyway,
all fentanyl products.
They've had all hands on deck. I was there. All hands on deck. All people. You know what I also think Wisconsin is? It's like Portugal. You know how you see, oh, in Portugal, they did this thing about drug treatment, and it's working, right? Because there's only 3 million people there.
Right, right.
Milwaukee and the surrounding areas and the region there, it's these guys and like 8 other people that I met. Wow. Are serving that population.
Jeez.
And educating and getting the needle exchange and getting the – now they have these fentanyl testers.
Good.
Right?
For the heroin.
I mean, I don't know that I was that – I don't know that I'm that organized a junkie. I'd do my fentanyl test, but there are junkies like that.
Dude, somebody told you they had HIV and you shared a needle with them. Yeah. You were that kind of junkie.
You just get some hot water. But they've made a real impact, and Patrick owes me $20 because I said they would, and it has gone down.
Yeah, well, so you know, it's because of people like you that this thing is getting better, and it is getting better finally. I would argue that one of the other things they've done is scared the shit out of physicians, so they're now not prescribing the way they were. So the supply is being cut off. China's been cut off now for the fentanyl, but we still have a massive problem, right?
Yes,
and part of it, guys. I've been thinking a lot about this lately, and I don't have a fully formed theory or even an idea about this, but something is going on in our country that is predisposing to this. You know, you and I talk about it a bit, Bob.
Hopelessness and hopelessness, a lack of education.
Loneliness, lack of connection, foolishness, family decay, spiritual emptiness. Can you guys have any hints at what's at the core of all that?
Oof, that's a big question.
Yeah.
It's not in Milwaukee, but it is in the regions outside because they go out and just meet people at McDonald's parking lot.
Well,
dude.
That's the point. They provide connection, and that's why they have success. Mm-hmm. But why the languishing before you guys come in as a fire squad?
I think it is a lack of connection. I mean, I go to the like. I don't believe there's any drug culture nowadays, especially with the so-called millennials. Like they're banging in their, you know, in a Taco Bell bathroom by themselves.
Or their bedroom, you know? Their bedroom or their mom's house.
Yeah, their bedroom, right. their basement, yeah.
And so I think that's why we see a lot higher death rate is just the being alone and using versus, you know, I think the days when Bob and Ryan and other people were running with a crew, with a tribe.
It was Bob and Courtney in a bus at MacArthur Park. That was the scene.
Courtney will look out for you. I'll tell you that.
You told me.
That's certainly part of it.
But it's a recapitulation of something they're already experiencing, right? Is it their families are destroyed? Is it they don't have purpose? I can't get at the core.
Well, you got great grandmothers raising their children.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So somehow, somehow the decay of our society.
Is it the family decay?
That was addiction rose up out.
And by the way, some of the family stuff is not decay, but over-parenting. We're getting it wrong on both sides.
Sure, sure.
Well, when you have economic – here's what I saw, not in Wisconsin because I didn't go outside of Milwaukee, but in West Virginia I was.
God, who would?
I want to go visit where my dad's
born. By the way,
I have been
all over Wisconsin. Corolla and I did a tour once speaking at all the Wisconsin universities. We were at Green Bay. We were at Whitewater.
Thunder Bay?
Whitewater
or something?
Whitewater and
Madison.
Everywhere except Madison. Strangely, Madison didn't want us. It was
really?
Interesting, yeah.
Too progressive.
Huh. Yeah. Super progressive. So,
I think we weren't progressive
but
enough.
But in
at
West
time.
Virginia, look at this.
I'm not kidding. I think that's what
look
it was.
What happens in West Virginia. And it's similar to what happened in the inner city in the 70s and 80s. You never move out of your parents' house. Millennials in general don't. Then you've got 3 generations living in one house, right? And grandma, who's like in her mid-50s, starts going to the doctor and getting pills.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then that's what's going on. You're talking about 3 generations of addicts. in their teens and early 20s, in their late 30s and early 40s, and in their 50s and late 50s.
I hear you, but still, that's too just so for me.
They're all living in the same house. That's a meshment.
But that should be good, right? With
No, it shouldn't.
No, there was a time, gentlemen, riddle me this. I remember 23 years ago, people going, well, in Japan, they all live in them. They have multi-generational, take care of each other. They don't put their elderly in the nursing home. They all live together. So how can that itself be the core problem?
What do you guys think the problem that was happening in Wisconsin was? What identifying things? Doctors? Drew's big on doctors.
Well, they were the suppliers.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of hopelessness. I mean, my inner socialist wants to say that it has to do with wage stagnation. It has to do with a shitty outlook.
But I think he's
a shitty outlook on what's happening. GM plants closed here.
Yeah.
Master lock, you know, and what are you going to do?
But
what are you going to do?
There,
Dad's been working his ass off his whole life, and then he's home all the time.
I absolutely think that's a piece of it. Is there a way other than socialism to inspire? No. I'm just asking because I'm not. I'm just wondering. I always wonder: is there a way? Because what people need, it seems to me, is inspiration and purpose. And I'm not sure socialism gives them that.
No. I'm not advocating that socialism is the answer to that. I'm just saying that, you know, I think that that's a huge part of it. The working class has just been shit on in this country for generations.
Yeah.
Four, five, six generations.
And so how do we fix that? Because if you don't fix the core issues of it, the getting people off drugs does give them hope. Here's another thing that's interesting. The drug problem itself created its own industry, which is outpatient programs, all these different jobs, service industry, economy jobs, where, you know, some of my only millennial successes have been, then they worked for me, and then they worked in the recovery industry. It's an industry that popped up out of the lack of good, high-paying manufacturing jobs.
I wonder if there is a way to your point, and I'm getting everybody's name straight, as I look at you, who's sitting in the middle?
Patrick.
And on your left is?
Kevin.
Ryan.
Okay, Ryan was
on his left.
Yeah, and then Kevin. So Ryan, makes me wonder if maybe a cultural shift whereby economic success and, you know, the sort of whatever our myth about it being a participant in the economy has been the priority, certainly for white men. Maybe a new myth needs to develop that relationships are more important or some other community, some other quality becomes how you define yourself, not just your job.
Right. No. Yeah. That is it's a closed loop for sure.
I would say it's pretty simplistic, but the number of individuals that I end up working with, especially in that younger demographic, I mean, just a lack of passion and I mean that in the broadest sense, like, so, you know, on their intake, it's like, well, what do you like to do? I don't know.
Yeah.
Whereas,
Bob's favorite.
I always knew three things I wanted to do.
Right. And Bob's favorite quote of that age group is when he asks them, don't you want to, you know, don't you get out of the basement? Don't you want to do something? And they go, what do you want me to do? It's like, I don't know. What do you want me to do? It's like,
yeah. And then you just reparent.
Wow.
Hey, Ms. Kevin, why do we have an opiate problem?
Lack of passion for life.
But part of it is they don't know what relationships are because they don't come from good relationships. And so how do you even start that process?
Well, you become a mentor and a sponsor and a counselor. And
well, man, you're talking
and then
about
you're managing
super labor intensive stuff, right? Which is true. That works.
So it's going to take, though, right?
Maybe. I just wonder if there's something culturally that can shift that will help us.
The Milwaukee Bucks winning the championship will liven things up. That's for sure. You know, that those things that community were like, my dad was part of Moose Lodge. My mom was in the Seroptimus Club. I don't even know what the fucking Seroptimus Club is, but I'm sure that it doesn't exist anymore.
Well, did you ever see that?
What is Seroptimus?
I have no idea. It sounds like somebody cuts toenails.
No, Moose Lodge, Seroptimus Club. I played for the Optimus Club baseball game.
But listen, do you ever read the same in the book Bowling Alone? It's called a book called Bowling Alone, and it chronicles the drop in club membership in this country.
When you guys were growing up, weren't your parents in clubs? Were your parents in clubs, Kevin?
Yes. My parents are in German dance club.
They still are?
Still are.
But club membership was – I mean, Fred Flintstone was in a club, right? He was in the Moose Lodge.
Yeah. No, right? He was called the Water Buffalo.
Water Buffalo, whatever.
Water Buffalo, yeah.
You know, and that was sort of normative American behavior then, that you'd have these clubs.
Well, what is it? What is it? I mean, our houses get bigger and our number of friends get smaller, right? Isn't that some big theory?
It seems to be accurate.
And how do you switch that? The 12-step community obviously fills a big network of that.
Well, right. That's what it is, right? That's what it is. Right. And if we, you know, it's been under attack for a while, and that makes me very sad.
But when I went there and I went with those guys to there, it's not like that in Milwaukee.
Oh, really?
So it's really the coast. I don't even know that it's New York City. It's definitely Florida. Los Angeles has been so profoundly affected by the psychobabble of the rehabs, it trickled into the 12-step world. And it's as if sponsors are counselors and therapists and stuff,
for sure.
Rather than just be, you know, stay sober and let's go eat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. Let's go eat.
Right.
Yeah. The pure recovery has been adulterated. I agree. You want to say something?
It's just that's why why 12-step is under attack, because rehab speak influenced so much the 12-step community in the last 15 years.
But there's also a professional community that has jumped into the treatment of addiction, has professionalized the treatment, and said, you can't have non-professionals managing these people. That's too dangerous. So they have sort of tried to overtake it. Now John Kelly and Keith Humphreys, John at Harvard and Keith at Stanford, are publishing data that shows that 12-step is as effective as any.
There's a side to that. Nothing is really that effective.
Correct. But it's as effective as anything else, and it's free. It's free. Right. For God's sakes, it's free. And at minimum, it saves healthcare expense. And at best, it's free, and it's
You've got three guys that are on the front lines every day. What is it, Patrick, that gets somebody sober and keeps them sober? Because that's the question of the hour, every hour for 100 years. I believe connection. It's love. Connection. I believe it's love.
Yeah, I mean, it's connection and love. That's it. And I think, Drew, you said the 12-step community is under attack, and rightfully so. And I think it should be under attack because we need to keep it to what it is. And that true, what Bob was talking about is my sponsor shouldn't tell me what medication to take or that I don't need to see a therapist because I have like dysthymia or depression.
Right.
Like the role of a sponsor is to work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and that's it.
Yeah.
Right. No, my sponsor is not my financial advisor.
Right. And then you bleed into these sober coaches and all this stuff. And the sober coach is not your sponsor if you have to have somebody babysitting you. But there's blurred lines are the issue, and I agree with that. But there's been a huge attack on 12-step as it's sort of some sort of cult. It's a religious cult. So what has happened is people that don't like 12-step or were somehow had somebody in their loved one who died in spite of 12-step. Plus the professionalized community have all ganged up and said, this is a horrible thing. It's dangerous. Be careful. And all I'm saying is, hey, it's free. It works. You probably may also need some professional help, and please do take advantage of that. Don't not do that. But this is another element in the armamentarium we need to treat this very complex disease.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's a tool. Yeah.
Do you think it's geographically though too? Because like here in Milwaukee, I mean, we're really lucky. Like,
super lucky.
There's 300 12-step meetings.
It's like going to 80s AA in Beverly Hills.
Wow. Yes, everything's geographic. There's differences all over the place.
That's the first comparison between Beverly Hills and Milwaukee in a long time.
Your 12-step is like Beverly Hills.
No, Beverly Hills 12-step in the 80s was the best.
Interesting.
West LA, Beverly Hills,
Pasadena
Santa Monica.
Was pretty good.
Pasadena was good too.
Susan, right? What's that?
Legendary.
Really good too.
New York has a very New good York. Recovery. Very, right. But you know, think about
but
New
it's
York.
Super, it's transient though.
To some
which
extent,
makes it difficult to form a community.
And I would argue downtown, they are no bullshit down there.
Yeah.
Oh, I believe that. Yeah. I believe that. I had some friends that lived in Manhattan lived in Brooklyn that said that it was you couldn't really get to know anybody because people
that
were
makes
always
sense.
Moving around.
That makes sense. Susan, any questions
Bert DeBrow says hi.
Oh my God.
Bert who does?
DeBrow, my old executive producer from
Doctor
Show.
Yeah, he's watching. A lot of people are watching. Somebody asked Little Rosalie.
Yeah, Bert.
Okay. Little Rosalie asked, does rehab at 10 grand for 30 days sound right?
10,000 for 30 days.
That's a good price.
That's not a bad price. But here's
the
deal.
Oh, wait, plus insurance? plus their billing their insurance, or
that's what she didn't ask.
They should, in my humble opinion, they should be able to do it for $7,000 to $8,000, and they should be able to do it with full professional services. That's my humble opinion. We used to do it for that.
Yeah, if you're doing cash pay, what's the pricing? Come on, guys, chime in. How much can you get 30 days? You know, pretty good drug treatment in Milwaukee or in Wisconsin for.
$5,700.
Good.
That's amazing. So look at how he shot that price back. I'm the LA guy. Well, it depends. Well, insurance. Yeah. $5,000. Milwaukee's just like $5,700. You got it?
Can you come from out of state?
Yeah, can they come there?
can I answer her question? I mean, just $10,000. I would tell her she's got to know somebody that's in recovery in like her community and call that person and ask where they went versus like going on Google or calling.
Don't Google.
How do you guys feel about this? I sometimes tell people go to a 12-step meeting, raise your hand, get some numbers, and then start asking around where they think good treatment is. Does that sound good?
Awesome. Yeah. Totally. Perfect.
For sure.
Yeah. You'll end up at Cry Help every time.
Good. That's good treatment, dude. That's really good.
That's great treatment.
Yeah.
Not to millennials, it's not.
Oh, yeah, well.
Somebody said, where? 5,700?
Milwaukee, baby.
Milwaukee. Yeah, what's the name of the place?
The name of the place, Kevin?
Nova
in Oshkosh,
Wisconsin.
By God.
And you can get a job at the factory that makes pants? What does it make there?
Oshkosh Bagash
overalls.
Overalls. There you go.
Yeah.
That's my deal.
My alma mater is Nova Treatment.
Really? Is it?
Nice.
So for $5,700, you could and a $400 plane ride, you can go up there, get treatment.
Right.
Go down to the Oshkosh factory, get a job, a good manufacturing job. Your life can be changed forever.
Yep.
Bring a jacket.
That's the thing that sobriety used to be. It was when you would run all options off the table, and you were just willing to take a chance on sobriety and wherever it led. There's another thing that all options aren't off the table because people live at their parents' house and the parents will put up with it forever.
Well, but that seems to be the issue, right?
Parents, yeah.
Is that either there's no connection or there is no sort of attempt to swim in the world, you know, to get by in the world.
Mm-hmm. Right.
One or the other. Those are the two.
In addition to Nova, so they come into Nova, and what Nova has done is then created sober living, and this is kind of a plug for Nova.
Yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, plug them.
So
if you got the commie sober, you got to plug them.
Yeah, exactly. But in addition to that, they have the sober living, and they have partnered with a manufacturing company called First Step.
Is that right?
Where that when they come out of treatment and they go into sober living, they can get a job at manufacturing.
They get you a job in outpatient.
Yes. That's why I like True Recovery. They do the same thing. They have vocational rehab.
Right.
So.
That's amazing.
And so in the morning, they gather up and they read something maybe out of the big book or NA book. And then they go and they go to their separate little locations and do their job. And
how do they organize?
It's all recovery based. The first thing on their application is a question called, what are you doing for your recovery?
Nothing.
Which is that magical ingredient. You know, I talk to a lot of parents about, you know, their kids and with whatever mental illness they have. And with the pixie dust of any mental health treatment is the participation of the patient. And it's true in addiction. It's true in essentially all the mental health area. But getting somebody to have insight, which is, again, lacking in most mental health diseases, part of the problem is it blocks the insight, and then motivation to participate in their own care. It's really hard. If we could crack that, we could make everybody better. Because the unwillingness, the lack of capitulation.
Well, isn't education's a component of it? I mean, I'm telling you, Drew, I deal with these people. Some of them are as dumb as rocks. There was never anybody as stupid as the kids I've met in the last 10 years when I was a kid. Well, there is not.
That's going to make a strong connection to those kids, Bob. Way to go.
Our education system is broken.
Wow. That's another problem.
Yeah, that's a huge problem, for sure.
I think, you know, one of the things that I've run into, because you had mentioned that I'm an interventionist, and sometimes I do that. But the first question I always ask is the individual willing to go right. and get help.
Right.
Generally speaking, no, they're not.
Right.
So really the intervention for me then is on the parents and the loved ones and educating them and changing how they approach that individual.
Yeah.
And getting them into therapy,
well, yeah.
and changing, you know, their language.
No, 100%. I would say it's Kevin, right?
Yeah.
Kevin. Yeah, Kevin.
I'm trying to get his name. 100%, Kevin. I what I always tell the family is to when I'm beginning the conversation is you're dancing with them, patient. You're dancing with the disease. We have to get you off the dance floor. And the only way I know to do that is with Al-Anon and a therapist and all these support systems. And I always tell them, I almost never go in a room alone with a drug addict because it's an interpersonal disease. It will dance with you no matter how skilled you are.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And you can always tell how sick the substance user is by the people who are surrounded them, the mom and dad, and how unwilling they are to go to the Al-Anon, you know.
How often do you hear, Kevin, I'll do anything for my son. Go to Al-Anon today. It's, oh, yeah, anything but that. Anyway, what do we need to do for this guy?
I've been there before. Yeah. I don't like it.
It doesn't work for me.
I don't like it.
What are we going to do? I'll do anything. It's like,
exactly, except that.
So,
anything melodramatic and costly.
Okay, we'll take a little break. Well, it's hard to believe a year has passed since one of the worst cold and flu seasons on record, but here we are again. So if you happen to catch a bug, the one thing every doctor will tell you is stay hydrated. Proper hydration eases a lot of the symptoms of many of these viral illnesses, and sports drinks, water alone, is not the issue. You need to be aggressive. You need something like Hydrolite, full fluid replacement. Hydrolite is this oral rehydration product you've heard me talking about. It's better than anything out there. It delivers the right balance of sodium, glucose, and water, providing up to 4 times the electrolytes sports drinks can offer, all with 75% less sugar. So think about that. It's like taking an IV by mouth. But my favorite thing is the convenience. I'm always on the run, so I use the effervescent tablets. You just drop them in a water bottle or even a glass of water. I literally never leave home without them. No one in my family does, for that matter. And because Hydrolite is appropriate for all ages, it's perfect for the little snowman amongst you when they come home from the school, perhaps sniffling. Hydrolite comes in great flavors, orange, berry, and lemonade, available in a pre-mixed drink, a powder, or, like I said, those fizzy tablets. I love those. They go everywhere. Come in a little tube. Every package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. Order your supply today at hydrolite.com/drdrew. For a limited time, you can save 30%. We use the code at checkout, drdrew18. That's Dr. Drew 18. So, either click through on our banner at drdrew.com or go to hydrolite.com/drdrew and then use that code, drdrew18. So speaking of vocational rehab and the fact that we think that's an important part of recovery as you get into sober living and your outpatient care, that's something that True Recovery offers, which is why I like these guys. You know these guys. You've been working in Orange County for a while.
I've been hearing about them.
All right. They are very individualized in their care.
Are they in Newport? Where are they?
I think it's Costa Mesa. Susan, check out the True Recovery's site for me if you can. It's more in that zone, that area. And they have full services from, you know, residential, outpatient, vocational rehab.
They're coming up out of the ashes of Costa Mesa Rehab.
Is that right?
Because it's not got the best reputation, Costa Mesa, and so people are really good actors are now coming up out of the ashes.
Oh, good.
You know what
I
mean?
Well, the people I've spoken to there, the professionals are really good. They've had a lot of experience.
Well, that's the good news about treatment moving forward.
All
the good people are going to maintain jobs because you just lost 100 rehab centers in Southern California.
All not good ones.
Not good
one
ones.
One just burned down.
But in every one, in every rehab, there's good people.
They're good people.
So now there's better staff everywhere.
Yeah. Well, I spoke to these guys, and they lament all the same stuff we lament. They lament the insurance company stuff.
Yeah.
They lament how tough it is to get people into patient. All the stuff we're talking about here today, they share our philosophy
and
concerns.
For
so
that,
yeah,
it,
so I'm rooting for them.
It's in Newport Beach.
It's in Newport proper.
Yeah,
okay.
I thought
it was towards somehow.
It's probably over
by. Is it by 17th or something?
On Acacia.
Acacia, okay.
I don't know.
Anyway, they have assistance with life and coping skills, school vocational coordination, and you can get more information about True Recovery. And the personalized care you need, go to drdrew.com/true, T-R-U-E. That is drdrew.com/true. Again, they have master's levels of clinicians, small caseloads. They can really personalize the care and offer individualized treatment plan. And they know what they're doing, which I was very relieved to see. Not just relieved. It's inspiring
a lot
to
of
see
good
people.
People. It was the owners that were bad, Drew.
Listen, I'm just glad to see when people just understand the disease, I'm thrilled. Because a lot of people who don't understand the disease that are claiming to be treatment professionals. So
yeah, Pete, equity fund guys.
Well, you and I, no. I go to addiction treatment physician meetings rooms filled with people that don't know this disease and who call themselves addiction medicine specialists. Now, that's not all of them, but a lot. Trust me.
They're just psychiatrists trying to make a buck.
Great. You're making my case for me, aren't you?
So I'm optimistic about the future
all
of
right.
treatment.
Good. That's
you know,
good.
And let's just touch. These guys are so great when Aloe burned down. And
tell
and
us about that. What happened?
So every treatment center in Malibu burned to the ground. It was like,
oh, really?
It was like a firestorm, like 30 feet tall, a wave of
fire. But I didn't realize
fire.
That. But you happened to be where all the treatment centers were.
Treatment centers are kind of up north of the pier,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So Creative Care and Cliffside and Aloe and
did
Passages. Cliffside burn down? Yeah, Cliffside.
Passages,
all of
Passages
it.
Too.
Passages too. So you know,
what's
we're
the matter,
just,
true?
Huh?
Okay.
What? He's happy that some of them burned.
No, he's not.
What?
No, I'm not saying anything.
You didn't want to see.
No.
Let the Milwaukee guys talk about Passage.
I don't wish. I don't wish.
No, I know. I know. But it makes the playing field equal now, right? Everybody, first one back to Malibu, but it's hard. There's no electricity. And so we've got two houses that we got, and we'll be up and running by January 1, probably. But
wow.
It was devastating. And what made me sad is.
He moved all his patients to Westwood, right?
Yeah, West LA.
West LA, yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy.
That was Bob Forrest at his best. That's when you are
yeah,
glad
everybody,
you have a
that's
all when glad
the employees.
You have a junkie running the program.
That's right.
Because we're going to get through this and we're going
to
figure it out.
Fire,
exactly.
Yeah. You drag them out by
yeah.
the hair.
Yeah. No, I just saw the fire jumped the 101 freeway 17 miles away from Malibu at 6 a.m. The houses were burned to the ground by 4 p.m.
Oh.
It was crazy.
How long did it take to get everybody out?
Just a couple hours. Yeah. We started at 8
But by then you were stuck
in
traffic,
morning.
Right? Because of the
No, we were out before that. Those are people that waited. Not,
oh, yeah.
You know, I was trying to see which way the wind was going to blow. And I knew just from what I was seeing and what this great guy that was on the ground that works for us there, he was like, I said, which way is the wind blowing? He goes, all directions.
He's right, right?
All directions.
I heard somebody say that.
So that meant you can't, speed, you
the
can't know
the
which way.
Fire and the speed of the wind. Had the fire consuming the equivalent of a football field every second.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
It was just burned right to the ocean.
Yeah,
just right to the ocean.
Yeah, and it always does every time.
Doc, you said that's when it's good to have a junkie at the helm.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Do you know, I still show your and Bill Nye the Science Guy episode in treatment.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me tell you a story about that. Bob's laughing because he's giggling because here's the backstory.
I was in the audience of that.
I know you were.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you
short hair.
Right. But hat on. The hat was on.
Yeah, a little hat.
And what you don't know is the last time before that day that I had seen Bob Forrest was some probably 14 years.
Police involvement.
14 years earlier. He would come on my radio program regularly, and he was getting way bad in his disease.
You were getting crazier and crazier guests.
And I was not happy. And I finally said, look, I can't. This is too painful to be around him. We're watching him die right in front of our eyes. Let's just say our goodbyes. He's going to die of this disease. There's nothing we can do about this as much as we'd like to. And he is not to come back. I can't be a part of this anymore.
You know, let me translate that for your producer, who was a drinking cocaine friend of mine. Drew's saying you can't be on the show anymore.
Right.
I want you on, but Drew doesn't want you
right,
on. That's what I was told.
That was not my – right.
You know who we're talking about.
Yeah, that was not my
way you got off the dance floor.
So I got off the dance floor, and I literally believed he died. I thought he died. And so while I was with Bill Nye in that audience, looking out in the audience, the whole time you're seeing me speak on that video, in my head is this constant, holy shit, there's a ghost in the audience where that guy looks like Bob Forrest, but it can't be Bob Forrest. He's dead. It's impossible. And at the end of the whole day, Bob walks up to me and goes, hey, you know, we knew each other one time. I was like, oh, I nearly collapsed. It was such a shock
so
to me.
Crazy.
I got to tell you something.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's where we rekindled our relationship. And then I went and I stole him from another place to turn him into a hospital-based treatment professional.
And that was a whole episode in itself.
Yeah.
I've been
yeah.
talking more and more about that. That era of what you taught me about, you know, just carry out your orders. Just stay in your lane. Those are probably the most valuable things, and those guys can vouch for it. Nobody in chemical dependency anymore stays in their lanes.
Well, because a hospital is a military system, and it's based on how nursing does their thing. It's military. And so you have a job to do, and you don't insubordinate, and you don't step outside of your job. You can. There's a system you can refer to expand your job or to change your job or complain about things, but you don't do it on your own.
But in these new treatment centers, if you don't understand splitting, which most licensed therapists
don't understand, and just don't
split. Just stay in your lane. Just do your job. Just that stuff is what you taught me.
So I'll let you guys take a little more on this topic. So for us, what the magic ingredient, again, the other fairy dust we added to our treatment team is we had a team of professionals. There was probably 10 of us at our core. Yeah. Where we all knew each other.
Two licensed psychologists, which does not exist in treatment anymore. Do you know that? They got rid of psychologists. It's all marriage and family therapists. We had zero marriage and family therapists.
We had trainees from MFT coming through, I think, didn't we?
Okay, but Farina. But the point is, Dr. Lonnie Kai.
Everybody knew each other.
We had doctors.
Everybody knew each other inside and out. And so if a patient tried to split, we would just go, no. It's like, okay, whatever. Because we knew if, you know, they would go, oh, Sasha said blah, blah, blah. And I go, no, she didn't. Because I know Sasha and she'd never say that. So let's move on. And that's how we dealt with all the splitting. And then the patients would attach to one of us because we'd all have different personality styles. Mm-hmm. And we could actually make diagnostic sort of information out of who they attached to.
Who they liked.
Who they liked and stuff. Would tell
us about sociopath if they like Sasha.
Right, right. And the borderlines with me.
Yep.
And then you
always.
And you got the what did you get?
Antisocial.
Oh, antisocial.
And I aligned with them and we formed an army.
True.
So what do you guys, who attaches to who? Obviously, Ryan's an antisocial, so he gets all those.
Clearly. But all the misanthropes.
But
I get all the misanthropes.
At your jobs, are people still so aware of attachment and splitting, or is it the chaos that we're experiencing out here in L.A. treatment centers that people just don't really understand how to deal with drug addicts?
I'm biased because the places that I've worked have been really good at it, right? So we all know where we fit and where we should talk to people and where we shouldn't and all of that. So I can't speak on it because all the places I've worked have been really good at that.
So
like,
does the staff talk about splitting?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
what is splitting?
See, that's why
there's... Were you seriously?
Huh? Yeah, I have no idea what that is.
Okay, he's a resident junkie.
Yeah, I'm just a heroin addict.
He doesn't work in treatment. So splitting is, I tell you that Kevin told me it's totally cool for me to go on this pass. And
oh, like divorced, you're like a child of a divorced parent?
That's exactly what it is. Sure, it comes from an internal split in feelings about self and mom. It's good mom, bad mom. We talk about that as a
And he doesn't have the time to sign the pass, so you need to sign the pass, Ryan.
And whoever is...
And if you go, whoa, I don't even know anything about this, they go, oh, my God.
You're the worst.
You're the worst.
Yeah. Triangulating.
Triangulating is part of it. All good, all bad. Work? Splitting one against the other. Oh, it's brilliant.
At shitty rehabs, it works all the time.
They're masterful at it. They're masterful.
This staff sucks. You guys don't even know what's going on.
Well, the most dangerous part of it of all is they know to go to the highest authority in the team, and they enlist that person's empathy. They always go to the doctors. Bob's a horrible.
No, but
Bob's had to be.
Nowadays, the new version is they tell upon admission. When they were trying to get me to come in here, they said, right?
I get my own room.
Yeah, my own room. Yeah. I can have my dog.
Yeah, yeah.
I can have my dog.
So the splitting starts right away.
I have a question.
Splitting immediately.
Instagram.
Yeah.
I mean, Facebook Live. Sorry. Dr. Drew, how do you treat or deal with an individual who has an addiction issue, but also bipolar?
Very common.
Has been incarcerated for the second time due to his release, due to be released in December 5th. Some days he admits,
in
denial.
This is meth, right?
Yeah. Do you?
Okay. So this is meth.
Her question is, do you treat the addiction first or the mental illness?
Well, it's sort of a loaded.
It's easy to treat the
mental
illness.
He's also from the U.S. Air Force,
here's the deal.
They make too big a deal about taking medicine.
Don't let him have a gun.
Okay,
please.
So here's the deal. Yes, don't let them have a gun.
Take medicine.
If we would expand, if we would expand conservatorship, what state is she calling from?
To make him take his meds?
To make him take his meds?
We could expand conservatorship. If we could expand gravely disabled a little bit, we could take a guy like that, stabilize him against his will, and then use – and when he wakes up and has insight again, he'll go – he'll be pissed, first of all, that somebody didn't do that sooner. And secondly, then you can begin to enlist him in his treatment. So it's pretty impossible to treat somebody that's psychotic, so obviously you've got to get that stabilized first. There's a lot of controversy about what in what order. That's kind of the art of addiction treatment and mental health treatment. Generally speaking, the addiction needs to be the focus of care. And that sounds like it's the primary problem in any event. But to not treat psychiatric symptomatology, whether it is a separate problem or caused by the drugs, to not treat it makes recovery very difficult, if not impossible. So you treat both.
And these are the guys that go and get a gun and shoot a bunch of people
yes.
in it.
Or they also end up on the street taking bikes apart and things on the sidewalk. And meth makes you take things apart. It just take everything. The cops are always asking me, why are they taking stuff apart on the sidewalk?
I think she said cocaine.
Trust me, it's meth.
Well, yeah, it's cheaper.
So. If they're vacuuming their front lawn, it's meth.
You gotta get the snow out of there.
Yeah, she said alcohol, pot.
That's how to stop the forest fires, is to vacuum your front lawn.
Yeah, that's really going to help
us. And please find out if he has a gun and make sure somebody takes it away from
You're
him.
Really gets... focused on this gun?
No,
well,
I,
she's right.
I'm tired of these these people with guns who have mental illness that are killing people.
Yep.
It's just everybody should not have their gun taken away, just the people
who should. Well, here's another thing. Let's talk real quickly about that then.
Yeah.
The Florida guy, he wasn't a gun guy, but he was the one that sent the bombs. That family was finally doing the right thing with him. But when you've done the wrong thing, I don't know if you read about it. He's got a history of steroid abuse and mental illness and addiction. And and his family finally said, enough is enough. Get out of here.
Yeah.
And he had been living in his van for like 6 to 8 months, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that
He's in his 40s.
Yeah.
They should have said that in his 20s.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
So he had no way of functioning in the real world. Living in his van, how he made all those bombs living in his van, this kind of
crazy,
shows that he's got some know-how. But it's boundaries, and when you're dealing with this complicated a case, like you know that age that that her brother is, lifelong history of substance use disorder, lifelong history of mental illness, and you just do what you and I would say to do, cut them off, you know, have some boundaries, blah, blah.
Get
you could create that,
that
I don't care anymore. You have to be very careful about it in the 30s and 40s. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I don't understand the final point you're making.
Where they can't live in, well, you have to understand how dangerous, you have to assess the person.
Yeah, it gets very dangerous.
To say
it's
whether you could cut them off and kick them out.
Yes.
It
can get very dangerous.
Because I believe in the Florida guy, if the mother hadn't cut him off and kicked him out, he never would have done that.
Right.
He would have just meandered along
and,
died
in his mom's
house.
Basement.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, but you know, also report things when they happen.
The cops don't do anything.
I know,
that's
the
other
problem. That's where the problem
is. The cops' hands are tied.
It's your nirvana, Bob.
Huh?
The cops, it's your nirvana. The cops have no power.
The cops have no power, Ryan. We can take over.
No, they don't.
It's true.
And the Air Force should be taking care of it too.
Yes,
like this
should.
Guy was in the Air Force. They should have social services and or the VA or people.
I would enlist the VA's help in that one.
Or Wounded Warriors.
There should be a
how
place
many,
you can report.
Hey, you guys, how much of a percentage of veterans are you seeing in your treatment centers?
Not very many.
No?
Really?
Little. Our VA here is gigantic.
It's like a hub.
It does really, really good work.
See?
Or the VA here in Milwaukee is
gigantic. See, I'm telling you, it's like Portugal there, Drew. I'm telling you.
There's a treatment center inside of the VA.
Yeah, certain VAs are doing remarkable work, and the other ones are sort of losing it.
Do you understand my Portugal thing? I'm so sick of hearing people say, America should be like Portugal. They legalized heroin, and everybody's happy.
Oh, man.
And I always say,
I had to sit next to that guy.
Oh, you did? At the ASAM thing?
No, at the Politicon.
do tell the story. Portugal, Portugal. When you look up the population of Portugal, it's not even half of Los Angeles. Wow. And they think we should adopt the laws of right. for America.
Listen, every time they talk about Norway and Sweden, that's the same exact problem.
Right.
So what's his name? Yuri. What's his name? The author.
Johan Hurry.
Johan Hurry.
Don't look at me.
I sat next to him at a conference. And but on the other side of me was Governor Chris Christie, who went off on him.
Oh, really?
We should put
from
that
the
video
podium?
Up.
From
oh,
the
yeah.
podium?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
it was on the internet under political. It was on C-SPAN, too.
C-SPAN aired it yeah, last week. It was amazing.
Did you try to peacemake all codependent?
No. I did a little bit. I did a little bit.
You got to open and close. You got to open and close. So that was cool.
I did a little bit. But I you know, Johan Hari, I mean, I love new ways of thinking about things, but they cannot be so dogmatic and so right. so somebody who doesn't work in this and doesn't know what this is and is not a doctor and is not even a scientist.
Right. American drug addicts are different than Portuguese drug addicts.
But he has a point of view that is, I think ultimately his point is, and it's a good one, which is that what we started our conversation about is that mm-hmm. connection is lacking.
Connection
is the solution. Yeah. You know, connecting humans need other humans. Humans need purpose. And that's absolutely true. But once you get into your disease of addiction, well, now it's a little more complicated because we got to get you the point where you can connect, and that's tough.
And what these guys did in Milwaukee, it is like this. You couldn't replicate it in Los Angeles or New York or Miami or other cities. It's just they're a community of them and their friends and people that they know from different organizations, and they just decided nobody's going to do this. The government's not going to do it.
Do what?
Change the culture of yeah. Wisconsin.
Oh yeah,
lower the death rate.
For all the people that are running off Facebook and running over to see this Politicon thing, the outburst from Governor Christie was about close to 50 minutes in. It took a while before he blew up.
It just built,
and then it just boom.
And he's still advocating the sober companion thing.
No, you know what he said? He goes, "Look, when I was governor, I had lost family members. I have lost friends. It's a serious problem. I went out to treatment centers all over the state, and I said, what do you need from the state? What can we do? How does this work?'" And he did it hundreds of times, and he came away with an understanding of how addiction works, how recovery works, and how the treatment process works. And he wants that to be helped. That's all. Very simple.
So
wants to be helpful.
And he needs it to be a year. That's the Band-Aid. How long is treatment in Milwaukee nowadays? 6 months?
28 days with aftercare.
Yeah. How long is the aftercare?
The aftercare is the key.
Anywhere like
6 months, 9 months, right?
Yeah, usually people that come by me have been in inpatient somewhere for at least 30 to 60 days, and then usually another 90, if not 120 by me, and then to sober living.
That's great.
So like,
see, that's why you're having the success you're having.
Let's do a few minutes on the podcast. What do people learn there? What do you want them to tune in for?
Oh, boy. So Don't Die Wisconsin is a podcast focused. No, I'm not going to read it.
It's more like Dopey than it is like This Life, I can tell you.
And I like that.
No, it's kind of... It's a little bit of both, maybe.
It exists because of This Life. Yep. Like Ryan and I were listening to I think your first episode was with Andy Dick.
Oh, wow.
So Ryan and I were listening to you guys when it first started, and then Don't Die started, and then the three of us were like, we should do that. So we just kind of stole the Don't Die name from Bob and then called and asked if that was okay.
I was like, is this your new podcast, Bob? Yeah. Like, are you cheating on me again?
Yeah, there you go.
But what we really do is we bring in guests. We had like Amy Dresner on and stuff like that. But we just come together and we talk about what's on our minds, what we see in our local recovery community. We've had a big impact, I think, on educating the 12-step community on kind of like harm reduction. And MAT, and that, you know, basically our tagline is like, don't die and we'll figure out the rest later.
Right.
What is the evolution of you three guys about Suboxone? Cause I know I was very much against it. Then I was like, well, in certain instances, and now I'm very much for it properly used. Right. Mm-hmm. That was an evolution of thought over 5, 6, 7 years. Mm-hmm. Right. You too. He's not as evolved as I am.
Proper. I've always felt that there should be no limit to the range of things that we can do to help somebody recover from addiction. I have two concerns. One is we've not figured out yet what the right treatment is for the particular. We don't know which patients get which treatment yet. We really are not good at that yet.
Like, right. Kevin's big thing is case management.
Yeah. You know? They're giving MAT to everybody. It's like, yeah, how about naltrexone, implantable naltrexone for some of these guys? That guy that's happens to be a social worker who got a little going with Norco, let's put him on an implantable naltrexone and send him to meetings. He knows what to do. As opposed to stringing him out on buprenorphine, maybe that's not a great thing for him.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that we don't do that enough, number one. And then number two, the reason Bob is sort of used to me harping on it is I couldn't run a treatment program where there was opiates and benzodiazepines at the nursing station. I couldn't do it because the patients would all just spiral like maniacs. Oh, why can't I get this? Why don't I have that? He has Klonopin. He has Bob. Yeah, why can't I? I said, finally, I just made a decision. I said, okay, you want that stuff? You go to the psychiatric unit. This is an abstinence-based treatment program. That's it. Period. And it let me run the program. I couldn't run it with opiates.
And the first conversations, guys, we had with this is when Malibu started, we were partners and we were not, you know, we were at 50% occupancy.
Right.
And we were getting our nursing staff pulled and all this kind of stuff. And I said, Drew, we got to start using Suboxone. And he was like, no way, not on this unit. And that, you know, and I was just reacting to trying to keep everybody's jobs. I just knew that this is a new drug that every drug addict wants.
Yeah, I was fine with that, but plus it was the way our unit was laid out too. The patients were always around the nursing station.
Yeah, they always see what everybody's taking.
And so it was.
Is that how it is now? Do your clients know who's taking the Suboxone?
Only if they tell each other come in the office and
you shut the door. Oh, maybe we should have shut the door.
We had windows. There was windows all the way around. Remember?
So were you guys always for Suboxone, or you were against it and then evolved?
No.
Right.
I had to educate myself.
If you start on episode one of our podcast and go to all the way to the end, you can hear the evolution of Ryan's education on it, and it's pretty cool.
The commie was against the man.
Yeah,
he was against the man.
Imagine that.
Yeah. I don't work in treatment or anything, so I sponsor people often, you know, especially then that were strung out on this shit. And I was just like, I can't work with.
Yeah, we got to figure that out. That's definitely Drew's right. We haven't discussed what that sponsorship role is with somebody who's on 8 milligrams of Suboxone. Are they sober? Are they not? The simple answer to that question.
They should have goals.
They are in recovery, but they are not sober, is what I say.
Okay.
They are in recovery, but they are not sober.
What I say is, I don't fucking care.
Right.
I don't care. I'll take you through it until you can't do it anymore or something changes.
That's right.
It's not my issue to control what you're doing.
The last thing that any of the five of us want to do is make somebody feel stigmatized because they're on replacement therapy. That's the worst possible outcome of that. Or, like you said, you don't want to control people because addicts already feel like that's what the goal is. Like we're trying to control somebody.
Which is like the last role that a sponsor should take.
Oh, my God, yes. I find that comical when addicts retreat to that. You're trying to control me, man. It's like, okay. No.
I would say they are completely in recovery. Because, I mean, here's the difference, Bob. If I'm taking what I'm supposed to take, like 4 or 8 milligrams, that's one thing. If I'm getting 32 milligrams a day and like a script for 90 Xanax a day I'm zonked out, then I know I'm not in recovery. Doc, you're making an excellent point. Like,
you're making a great point too, because that whatever that is needs to be, we need to zero in on that in a sort of a formal way sometime. I mean, my field needs to do that.
Bob, what is recovery? I might have some kid coming into it and he's on, let's say, 4 milligrams. He's 90 days in. He's doing everything he can not to put a needle in his arm. And then there's some guy with like 40 years that is abstinent and doesn't take anything, cheats on his wife and his taxes and is a piece of shit. Like, who's in recovery?
That's the beauty of the 12-step world right there.
but it also it brings us back to
you describing Bill Wilson there, my friend.
But it brings us back to
You got to drop the acid at some point.
The core thing here, which is that people need to be encouraged to lead a certain kind of life. They need to be rigorously honest. They need to find purpose and passion. This is back where we started. This is the core of the problem. And you're not doing any of that if you're a shithead.
Right.
So you're just not.
But you haven't had a drink in 40 years.
Right.
And don't drink and go to meetings. You'll be fine.
And that's, you know what you call an asshole that doesn't drink? An asshole.
but to be fair, but just go to meetings and don't drink. that's good for some people. That is exactly what some people need.
Well, that's my friend, and I won't. Every time I criticize somebody that's really sober, whatever you want to categorize, sober as sober has been traditionally for decades.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not the new sober, but sober, but is an asshole. But is an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah.
My friend always says, "Well, imagine what an asshole he was when he was drinking."
Oh, yeah.
So at least he's less of an asshole, you would imagine, than if he's drunk.
You know what
all
I do
time.
Is I flipped that script a little bit. I talk about recovery versus full recovery. Because full recovery is a fully recovered, you know, somebody who's done therapy and spiritual work and everything, mm-hmm. and not just drinking.
Awareness.
So, yeah.
I would say Patrick's that. I'm not that.
You're not fully recovered?
No,
I think you're there. What is your...
Any kind of crazy thing I say, like via text, Patrick always comes back with the sensical thing.
Well, that's
is that right. How you guys experience him or not?
Yeah.
Well, it's just too fucking sensical all the time.
Yeah. And I know my wife is watching or listening to this right now, and her head just exploded because I am definitely not that.
Yeah. Well, with me, you are. So it's this beautiful back and forth that we got Milwaukee, we got Las Vegas, we've got Seattle.
What's Vegas?
Don't Dies. There's Don't Dies popping up everywhere, but these guys are the originals.
Bob, you were asking like what Don't Die is, and I think really what we are is the three of us here have the ability to go into any room, meaning in like last Friday night we were at the Medical College of Wisconsin talking to the ED docs about drug seeking behavior.
Good.
And then we can go down to Tent City and talk to guys that are banging actively.
Yeah.
Like that's really what Don't Die is the ability to go anywhere and talk to anyone and wear mm-hmm. different hats with forgive me, but just love and compassion.
Yeah, it's also changed the way I talk in the 12-step world.
In the ropes.
Completely changed it. There are things that I would never have talked about before that I talk about now.
Awesome.
Because it might save a life. It might change somebody's mind, you know.
Yeah, I mean we need an army.
Well, we're
gentlemen.
Changing people's minds.
We need an army doing this.
We're building.
Well, let's start a tour.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we could.
Hey, Drew, what are you doing next September? You want to come to Milwaukee? It's pretty fun. It's beautiful weather.
Talk to the producer who's ran away from us, by the way. But she's does she want us to wrap this up? Is that what this was?
Okay. Yeah, she wants us to wrap
the
joke.
She ran away,
up.
But I will. But she's the one that manages my schedule, so I will propose after. I'd happily come out there.
Yeah, we got
to
go out.
Great
there.
To have you guys, both you guys.
It is. It's like Portugal. Wisconsin
well,
is like
I wish
Portugal.
I wish you'd stop saying that.
No, it is.
How about
you? Because you can have an idea in Wisconsin. Put it forward and see the results within the year.
I would argue
see concrete results.
I would argue, that you're right, and that the idea of local, whether it's local, mm-hmm. local political, mm-hmm. local medical, local yep. community, that we have to. I think to me, that's again back to my original question. That's one of the main problems. We're all looking at craziness in Washington. We need to. That should drive us back to the local. We have
right.
We have a locus of control locally. We can make a difference locally. The entire
in LA you can't though. Do you really think
LA is
like its own
country? In Pasadena, you can't.
Can't you go neighborhood by neighborhood?
Yeah,
couldn't
right.
You, like, get little...
Sure, or meeting by meeting, whatever. But Alexis de Tocqueville in 1835 said that the reason democracy works in America is because we become accustomed to the local practice of democracy. In our schoolroom, we elect people. In our local, you know, governments, we elect people. The local practice is why we survived this 250 years. But we need to broaden that out to our mm-hmm. our interpersonal functioning and our psychological well-being as well.
All right, you guys.
Gentlemen, thank you for being here. We appreciate it very, very much. And
thank you guys.
The Midwest,
really
the nicest people on earth, the Midwest. Just drop a line down from where these guys live and you go all the way down to Nashville. Everybody's just the nicest people down there. So thank you for being there. Thank you for doing this, gentlemen. We appreciate it. And
thank you for joining us today.
Don't Die Wisconsin.
Check out their podcast and we all appreciate
iTunes.
It. iTunes, anywhere else you get your podcast, check it out there. And thank you, folks, on Facebook, and we'll see everybody next time.
Talk to you soon, guys. Bye-bye.
See you guys. Thanks.
All right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Check us out at KBCB and Lawrence Avon, 790 Midday Live Talk Radio, Monday to Friday. You can also tune in every day live via the magic of the internet at kbc.com. If you miss it, we've made it simple for you to find all the shows at drdrew.com, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, the Sync One I Do By Myself, Dr. Drew podcast, This Life, of course, with Bob, Swole Patrol, Mike Cantho, at his new health and fitness podcast. You can find us on Twitter at This Life Podcast, at Dr. Drew, Dairy W, at Rehab Bob Forrest, and of course, our lovely producer at First Lady of Love. I think I know who that is. If you love this show, please subscribe and tell a friend. We appreciate it when you do. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. Send us a message. Join the email list at drdrew.com/contact. You'll also get a weekly email from us on that. While you're at it, at drdrew.com, please support our sponsors by clicking through the banners. We only advertise products that I can get behind. So thank you for supporting them, those that support us. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.